This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, bringing you vital information to boost your health, your finances, and your rights. Find out more at carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. Cottage country real estate is booming back after a post-pandemic pause, and millions of people are making plans to watch April's total solar eclipse. We'll tell you everything you need to know. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. Junior doctors in England voted almost unanimously for strikes over a further 6 months. In total, almost 1.5 million appointments have been delayed since the job action began in January, costing the National Health Service £3 billion, or £5 billion Canadian. Also this week, Kenyan doctors have stopped providing emergency services at public hospitals as they escalated a national strike that entered its second week. Half of American parents still financially support their adult children, in some cases up to $1,400 a month. A new study by Savings.com finds it can be a substantial drain at a time when their own retirement saving is at risk. From buying food to paying for phone plans or covering health and auto insurance, 47% of parents with a child older than 18 provide them with at least some cash. Not only are their wages lower than their parents' earnings were in their 20s and 30s, they are also carrying larger student loans. A U.S. group representing more than a million realtors has agreed to a landmark settlement that has real estate experts hopeful Canadian home sellers could soon get a better deal. The National Association of Realtors agreed to pay $418 million U.S. and to eliminate the standard 6% sales commission. This to end claims from home sellers that say the group artificially inflated real estate commissions. This comes as a proposed national class action suit is making its way through Canadian courts, with the lawyer behind the claim saying a win would reduce the cost of Canadian homes by making it cheaper for people to sell their homes. A man has sued an Australian exhibition that admits only women. Men were turned away at the entrance to the ladies' lounge at Tasmania's famous Museum of Old and New Art unless they were butlers who, quote, lived to serve women. Jason Lau visited the museum last April only to be denied entry to the art and dining space with a Picasso and a wall of vaginas on display. And so he took legal action, arguing his exclusion breached the state's Anti-Discrimination Act.
I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away.
Gave it away.
The inventor of karaoke has died at the age of 100. Shigeji Nagase, a Tokyo-based entrepreneur, was the first person to automate and commercialize karaoke in 1967 when his Sparko box went on sale. He died after a fall, and while the invention of karaoke has widely been credited to another Japanese musician, it was, in fact, Nagase's invention that marked the first sing-along machine. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. If you're thinking of buying a cottage this season, you have plenty of company. Recreational property buyers are coming back into the market after staying away in the aftermath of the pandemic. And Ontario Zoomers are once again on the leading edge. Royal LePage CEO Phil Soper told me that is adding up to healthy price increases.
If I go back to the pandemic, when we saw a lot of irrational exuberance in real estate markets, it was just that much crazier in cottage country. And the downturn when interest rates rose and the economy got a little scarier, and we saw cottage properties drop a little bit more, and now we're seeing them rebound a little stronger. And interestingly, Ontario appears to be leading the charge.
Okay, so first of all, you're forecasting an average increase in the prices of 5%, right?
Yes, nationally.
So does that qualify as a big turnaround, or is that a normal yearly increase? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, good question. If you go back over 60, 70 years, real estate in Canada normally appreciates between 5 and 6% a year. So I would say it is right on normal and a little ahead of the urban market, which we believe will rebound this year. In fact, we're already seeing it, but not to the same extent. And it's not demand, interesting enough, this year. It's supply. We just have a real shortage, and this is a pan-Canadian comment, a real shortage of cottage inventory. By this time of the year, normally you would see quite a number more of listings, or at least preparatory work towards listings, and it looks like we're going to be short of inventory.
Is part of it that maybe people are hoping to see if things will get frothy like they were during the pandemic and they'll get more money for their property?
I'd say that's an accurate assessment of some people's thinking. And they're probably not wrong, even though there's way more cash involved in buying cottage properties than in cities. Our research found that 78% of people did have some financing in place for their cottage property, for their recreational property. So if you're sitting and waiting for prices to get going again, a little frothy, maybe you're thinking, well, borrowing will get cheaper. So if my house is more, my cottage is more expensive, overall, the cost of borrowing is less, and it'll offset some of the more expensive property, and there'll still be demand.
Could you give me a profile of who is buying cottages? Is it just rich people? Is it people of a certain age, boomers? Tell me what you found on that.
Before the pandemic, the biggest group was our Gen Xers. But now we do research this every year to see which age cohort is causing the most demand. It is mid-50s through 60s. If I went back 20 years ago, the number one question people asked was, what's the exposure? And now it's, what's the quality of the internet? It's possible to get video conferencing, Zoom-style video conferencing up in cottage country. So it's quite possible to get your kids up to a cottage. They work, and you play with the grandkids.
And you're saying that Ontario is leading this resurgence.
Yeah, we're expecting nationally 5% lift in prices, but that number climbs to 8% in Ontario. What is giving a little bit of relief and keeping prices from boiling over is we're seeing more and more low maintenance condominium developments in rural settings in cottage country. It increases density, it's better for the environment, but most importantly, it brings the price down, the entry-level price. And I think that'll appeal not just to retirees, but also to the entry-level generation, or Z, or young millennial types that are looking for their first cottage.
Tell me, what are the most popular areas in Ontario? Is it still the big Muskoka Lakes? And I'm assuming that they're also the most expensive.
A tie, really, between the Muskoka region and in the South Georgian Bay area. So that would be Thornbury, Collingwood, Meaford, Wasaga Beach, that sort of area. They're both looking at slightly softer prices, but around an average of $1.3 million.
What about the Kawarthas?
Quartha's much more affordable, ranging from $700,000 up to, say, $900,000 for an average price. And maybe the bargains, if you really do have the ability to travel or you live in these regions, it would be Eastern Ontario, the Ottawa Valley, Rideau Lakes, where you can get into cottaging for as little as $500,000. That's a waterfront single family home. Or heading north, up to the Bruce Peninsula and farther between Sault Ste. Marie and Sudbury along that beautiful stretch of lake country up there, where again, you're looking at, call it a third the price of what you'd pay in the Muskokas, but it's a long, long drive from Toronto.
Okay. Phil Soper, thanks so much for that.
Hey, no problem with me. You have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Royal LePage CEO Phil Soper. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. Coming up, everything you need to know about the upcoming total solar eclipse.
You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, fighting against ageism in the workplace and the marketplace. Find out more at carp.ca.
It's being dubbed the Great North American Eclipse. Arriving on Monday, April 8th, 2024, the total solar eclipse will cross North America, passing over Mexico, the United States, and Canada, after beginning over the South Pacific Ocean. Millions of people are planning to watch. I spoke with Bill Archer, mission scientist with the Canadian Space Agency.
A total solar eclipse occurs, let's say, in between 2 and 5 times a year, and it happens when the moon passes in between the Earth and the sun. So on the Earth, in a sort of a narrow strip, maybe about 200 kilometers wide, people will experience, you know, similar to total nighttime, they will have a few minutes of complete darkness as the moon passes in between the Earth and the sun. And then away from that line, people will see the sun gets partially covered by the moon.
And what is so special about this eclipse that we're going to get in April?
I think for Canadians anyway, the fact that if you live in sort of southeastern Ontario or Quebec or New Brunswick, some of the Maritimes, that you don't have to travel to see it. That, you know, I think, as I said before, there are maybe, you know, 2 to 5 eclipses in a given year. However, for a given location, if you just lived in one place your whole life, seeing a total solar eclipse is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
This eclipse is going to be visible in a lot of places in North America, right?
Absolutely. There's a tool that I quite like working with. It's called timeanddate.com. It's got a great map that you can sort of scroll and zoom and get a really good picture of what's going on with the eclipse. And from that, you can see that it's going to, you know, sort of pass through Mexico and then up through the states, through Texas and all many states as it passes north. And then it's going to, you know, sort of touch the southern edge of Ontario, Quebec. It's going to pass through New Brunswick and then Newfoundland and Labrador.
That's very exciting. Can you explain how it passes from one place to another?
Sure. So it really is just, if you think about, you know, the light of the sun being, you know, sort of projected onto the Earth, if you move the moon around in between the source of light, that is the sun and the Earth, the location of that shadow will move. So as the moon passes in its orbit, the location of that shadow sort of gets dragged along the Earth underneath the moon.
Again, in terms of what makes this one so special, why all the hype? Why are so many people so excited?
Well, I'd be curious to see what the local newspapers in various locations do. I think around here it's so exciting because, at least for me, this is the first time in my lifetime that I will have the opportunity to see a total solar eclipse happen close enough to me that I can drive and see it myself.
Uh-huh. And does it depend on weather or anything like that?
Well, so it, I mean, having the full experience of course being able to see the moon blocking the sun, you would like to have a clear day, absolutely. Now the eclipse, of course, will happen one way or the other, but it will be a lot less spectacular event if it's overcast that day.
I remember as a small child kind of being herded inside with all the shades drawn. Things have changed, right?
Absolutely. Now I understand there's a lot of schools that have given students the day off because it's going to be happening in mid-afternoon, late afternoon, right as the kids are getting off school in Canada. And I think the schools didn't want to be responsible for kids looking up at the sun. So although we're not pulling down the blinds and keeping everybody inside, I do highly encourage everyone to get appropriate protective eyewear for looking at an eclipse, because it can be quite dangerous to look directly at the sun, eclipse or not.
And why is that? Why is it so dangerous? And what should you get to protect yourself?
Right, so I'm not a physician, so I won't go into any great detail on this. But you were just, you know, quite literally going to burn your eye, the back of your eye, with the light that is too bright. The same normal reasons that we are not supposed to look at the sun directly. If you look online, there's the American Academy of Ophthalmology has recommendations for what to wear for solar eclipse glasses and sort of vendors that have approved ones. So take care of your eyes.
Take care of your eyes. Anything else you want to leave us with?
One thing I'd suggest people to look out for is as the moon is blocking out the sun, and there's just a sliver of the sun left, look down at the shadow caused by, you know, I suppose we won't have many leaves, but any bushes or trees that have just little dots of sunlight that are allowed to pass through, because each and every one of those little dots is actually going to be, it's going to look like a little tiny crescent moon. We take for granted that the sort of dappled light that passes through a tree is actually, those are tiny, you know, thousands of little pictures of the sun, and we don't notice that because they're all just little circles. But when the eclipse is happening, it's going to look quite strange with those little sort of crescents of the remaining sun that we can see.
Cool. Okay, thank you so much, Bill Archer.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
That was Bill Archer, mission scientist with the Canadian Space Agency. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Louise Neimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Jeremy Logan, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. With technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer Moses Neimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.